Hello, welcome along to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. It's the show that scans the universe in the search for all the most amazing discoveries and secrets that might be lurking somewhere. My name's Dan, thanks for listening. This week we're travelling to a boiling hot river. Also, we're talking about brand new black holes. And we're looking at the amazing complexities of a bee. Plus, I'll answer some of your questions in a sec. First, let's catch up with one of our favourite geniuses on the show, certainly the smartest person that I know at Fun Kids HQ. His name is Professor Hallux.
Professor Hallux's Pathology Puzzles with the Royal College of Pathologists.
Not Time Stop Crime Cop again?
It's not Time Stop Crime Cop, it's Crime Stop Time Cop. Sorry, no, I mean Time Cop Crime Stop. Whatever. He's a daring time-travelling pathologist figuring out how all these dead bodies met their sticky end. What's not to like?
So why does it always have to be about dead people, though? It's so gloomy.
Pathology isn't gloomy, it's fascinating. And it's certainly not always about dead people. In fact, it's most commonly used to diagnose and treat people who are alive. But you're right, the words tend to make us think of detective shows like this.
So this is forensic pathology?
That's right. Nothing to do with paths either.
Yes, I do know that, Professor. So, what do forensic pathologists do and why?
A forensic pathologist is primarily involved in identifying the cause of death and reconstructing the circumstances by which the death occurred. A dead body is called a corpse, and an autopsy, sometimes called a post-mortem examination, is a medical examination of a corpse to find out what killed it.
People die all the time. They must be very busy.
Yes, but autopsies aren't done all the time. They're usually done either for medical reasons or for legal ones. A medical reason may be when doctors aren't sure why a person died, whilst the legal one might be to find out if the death was the result of a crime. Wherever there is a puzzle, that's where you'll find pathology.
So they have to cut up the body and get all the squishy bits out. Ugh. It's all so icky.
Well, sometimes the cause of death can be found by simply looking at the corpse without opening it. Like looking for bruising or at a fingernail tissue samples under the microscope to establish the cause of death. But other times, pathologists may need to also examine the internal body organs. Don't worry, if a body is opened, it'll be closed again. Pathologists don't like to make mess, so it's not normally quite as dramatic as Time Cop Crime Stop.
Glad to hear it.
Professor Hallux's Pathology Puzzles with the Royal College of Pathologists. Find out more at funkislive.com/Hallux.
Right, it's time for my favourite part of the show. Absolutely. I get to answer your science questions. If there's something sciencey niggling around your brain, especially if you're stuck at home right now, being taught by your mum, your dad, whoever, if something they've said has slightly made you think a little bit, throw the question my way. I will do all the research for you. Just leave it as a review over on the Apple Podcast Store. This is from Ben and RZ, I think, who ask. It's quite a delicate one to deal with, but it's all about the current worldwide lockdown. That they ask, because of the lack of cars and planes, is it slightly helping the planet with lower emissions? Now, we'll talk about this, guys, a little bit more later on in the show, Ben and Arzy. Thank you so much for the question. But it actually does seem that way. Air pollution in the UK is remarkably down. Researchers in New York said that carbon monoxide levels from cars were down 50% compared to last year. There's been a huge drop in methane levels too. And these are all gases which trap the heat in and warm the world. But on the other side, scientists do say, they warn that when the lockdown is over, when we're all allowed outside again whenever we like, they think that emission levels will rise rapidly again, and that clearly isn't a good thing. Thank you so much for the question. And also, lastly today, because this one's a little bit complicated, SmartKid200 asks why there is a queen bee but no king bee. Now bees themselves and their colonies are amazingly complex. There are three types of bees. You've got the queen, the drones, and the workers. Now, the drone bees are all male, and their only job is to mate with the queen, to make new bees, and to keep the colony going. And the males, they don't have a stinger, which means the most important bees are all female. They have the stinger. They're the ones that make new bees. Now, the worker bees, they're also female. They get all the food and the pollen to build the hive and help it thrive. That's fun to say. And they're vastly important as well. The queen, though, she's the only one that makes new bees. That's why it's the queen. It's the most important one. So it has to be a girl. Therefore, it's a queen. Now, here's something else that's pretty cool about that. Queen bees are fed something called royal honey. Royal honey is fed to the queen bees by the other bees to help make it bigger and better than the rest and more suitable for the job of being the queen bee when it grows up. Yeah, an amazing question there, Smart Kid 200. Thank you so much for sharing it with me. If you've got something that you want answered on this show, you need to leave it as a review over on the Apple Podcast Store. Now, I think we can all agree the world needs some laughter right now. So it got me thinking, why do we laugh? What makes us laugh? What's actually happening inside us when we laugh? So we've got Stephanie Davis on the line. She is the founder and CEO of Laughology. And I think she knows and she can cover all bases for us. Hey, Stephanie.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you so much for joining us. I want to start with what actually happens inside our body when we laugh. What's happening with our lungs? What's happening? Why are we sucking air in? Why are we making that weird noise?
So what's interesting about laughter, so there's a couple of things happening. So from a physical point of view, we are making some of those sounds which are learnt. So we learn the sounds of laughter by the people around us. So we're more likely to laugh out loud and make sounds when we're in social groups. When we're laughing by ourselves, we're less likely to make a sound or as much sound. And the reason why we breathe in and we have that reaction is it's a response. It's a physical audio and visual response that we have to what we're seeing. And laughter was around long before we even had words. So that sound and that expression that we have is really important because it was a social interaction tool to let other people know we were either part of that group or they were welcome. So from the physical aspect, that's what's going on because it's important that it's seen. And then from the mental aspect, what's happening, and I suppose partly physical as well, is it releases four main hormones and neurotransmitters, which are chemicals in the brain, which is dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. A good way to remember it is a dose of laughter. So dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. And when that's released and surged in the brain and the rest of the body, it's creating this lovely relaxation. When we laugh, I often hear people doing this after they laugh. So it's almost like the whole body is relaxing, but it also produces these lovely chemicals in the brain, which counteract stress as well. So really good for us from a physical and mental point of view.
It's interesting that you say that it's learned. It's learned so we can get on with our mates and with our parents when we're in society, because when we think about humans that really do laugh, they're often babies, aren't they? One of the first things that you see babies do, they're smiling, they're laughing away, their eyes grow really, really wide. Well, they haven't learned how to do that, Stephanie. So why are they laughing like that?
So what's learned is that what we laugh at is learned, and the sounds, the production of laughter, that giggle is learned. Laughter is innate, so actually laughing is something that we're born with, but the sounds and what we laugh at is learnt. Now, the reason why babies have that giggle, have that sound, is they absolutely do learn it. So the first thing you'll see babies do is smile, which again is innate. But we also, part of it is learnt, so how much we smile and that response from people doing it to us. Now, when we see people and hear people laugh, laughter's innate, but that response where it's a sound, because as babies, we'll get a response for that sound. So we might make that sound because we might emulate our parents doing it. Then we get a response like an applause or a positive emotional recognition for that laughter, which makes us do it more because it sends out a positive neurotransmitter in the brain to say response was recognized.
When we laugh, when we're really young, our mums and our dads, they'll give us a hug for that, which makes us want to laugh more, so we get more
Absolutely.
Hugs. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, how about this? So, there's different types of laughter, though. When I'm with one mate, maybe we might be watching something on the telly and I'll have a little smirk, a little titter, I'll raise an eyebrow. But then when I'm with another friend, I will, you know, cackle, proper belly laughs. Maybe I might start crying. What's happening there? What's happening where, you know, one laugh is making me cry? Why am I crying when another laugh, maybe just something else that's happening, might just make me mildly be amused?
So it all goes back to that social structures that we have, and we have different bonds with different people. So we'll have different friends that mean different things to us and that we have different levels of communication with. And that's echoed in the way that we laugh with those friends as well. But also we'll have different things that we laugh at. Laughter is the output, and humour is the thing that creates that output, if you'd like. So the mental part, how we process that information. And because humour is subjective, then we will have different people who we are on more of a wavelength with, and we can really get to that sense of humour. And it really, I suppose, it pushes the tickle button inside us. And then there'll be other friends that we still laugh with, but we haven't got that deep social connection. And that's why laughter and humour is so, so important, because it drives these lovely, deep social connections.
You say it's subjective, so which means that it's different from person to person. Why does someone find something funny that I just don't get, but on the other hand, I can find something absolutely hilarious, which will make someone be stony-faced? What's going on there? What's actually happening in my brain to make one thing funny for someone else?
So that's a part of your processing. And our processing comes from our values, our beliefs and our memories. So how we're brought up. So our upbringing has a huge impact on our sense of humour. And that'll be learned from your parents, also from teachers. And then as we get older, from groups that we interact with, that we had more alignment with. Perhaps we were in groups that we wanted to be impressed by, or we wanted to impress. And then our humour develops in that way. As a comedian, I know that when I very first started comedy, I had a very different sense of humour to when, after the 10 years when I did professional comedy, I ended, because your sense of humour tunes in and turns and changes, and our sense of humour changes throughout our life as well.
Now, this is all going on at like a really deep level of the brain. It must be, if I've learned how to do this because I'm laughing, because I want other people to see that I'm laughing, so maybe they like me. Where is it actually happening in my brain? What's the thought process here?
So there's lots of parts of your brain that is triggering. So there's the language part of the brain, which is part of the prefrontal cortex, if we're going to be really technical, which is the front part of the processing brain. But there's the language part is based on both sides of the brain. But there's also the hippocampus, which is the back part of the brain, and the basal ganglia, which stores a lot of memory. So when you laugh at something, you're relating that to something in your own world. And that's the reason why you find it funny, because it either turns something that you know in your own world on its head, or you relate it to something, which is why observational humour is funny. But then there's also the other part, which there's something in the brain called mirror neurons. And your mirror neurons mirror other people's micro and macro and expressions. So I call it like the brain's Wi-Fi. So if you're laughing, even me hearing that will spike up my mirror neurons and send out the same emotional response, neurotransmitters and chemicals. And that's where empathy is created. And I will also mirror that in my macro and micro expressions if I'm seeing you, which is why the physical response of laughter is really important as well. And so we know that when people laugh, when they've been hooked up to MRI scans, that the whole brain lights up differently with all these beautiful colours that absolutely enlight emotions and positive emotional and neurotransmitter responses.
And we're stuck at home right now. We're around all of our family all of the time. things can get a bit tense. When we're with each other, maybe we don't like things about our brothers and our sisters quite a lot. But laughing can help bring out the best in each other and the best in how we think about other people, can't it? You found out some stuff about why laughter helps us with our mums and our dads and our brothers and our sisters, and we all get on.
Yeah, so this brilliant piece of research that's been done by Pop Children's TV channel looks particularly at when children watch cartoons and what happens afterwards. So when they have a fit of giggles, when they're watching these cartoons, they'll behave better afterwards. But also they're more likely to engage in other activities after they've watched something funny.
Brilliant. So you hear that, mums and dads, if you're listening? We can watch cartoons. It's good for us while we're stuck at home because laughter is amazing. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
You're very welcome.
Now, for today's Dangerous Dan, we're headed to a river that is so hot it will destroy anything that falls into it. The Chinay Timpishka is a river that flows from the Amazon in South America, right in the heart of Peru. Its name means boiled by the heat of the sun. And it's the only boiling river in the world. It's about 6 kilometers long in the center of the jungle. Have a listen to this. Its temperature ranges from 120 degrees to 200 degrees Fahrenheit. And it looks mystical. Imagine it right in the heart of the jungle. It's so hot that smoke billows from the surface, twisting through the air. Now, it's not heated by an oil spill, like people thought. They were worried about that, or by a volcano. The closest volcano is 400 miles away. It took a brave explorer called Andres Russo to travel to the river and to test out the water to find out what was happening. He found that it's fed by some boiling hot springs, with water that is heated as it rises from the center of the earth. It's fed by quite a few of those all along the river, 6 kilometers long, and that's what causes the scalding hot temperature of the boiling river. It's so hot that any animal that accidentally falls into it is burned to death instantly. Right, we're talking all about a brand new black hole that might help explain some of the secrets of the origins of the universe in just a sec. First, let's get some of your tech questions answered, your gadget queries with Technomum.
Technomum, engineering explorers.
There's a new skate park in town with tons of ramps and even a half pipe. If you ask me, there should be one in every town. Imagine how cool it would be if you could build a house with a skate park inside. Instead of stairs, you could have a ramp and you could use the half pipe as a bedroom.
You might have a problem with things staying put. What with all the slopes and curves?
Typical engineer.
Sorry. It's certainly an interesting idea, and thinking about better ways to build buildings and the cities around us is something a particular type of engineer gets very excited about. They're called civil and structural engineers.
Civil and structural engineers? Sounds kinda serious.
Well, building safe and pleasant places to live in is a serious job, and I bet you've tried your hand at it already.
Really? Are you sure? I think I'd remember something like that.
Whenever you play with Lego or build incredible structures in Minecraft, then you're a civil or structural engineer. Choosing the right bricks or materials for the jobs and experimenting with different designs to see what works best. Civil and structural engineers know how to make different kinds of structures in a way that makes them safe, steady and energy efficient, and able to do all the jobs that are needed. After all, if they're building a tower block, they need to make sure that the foundations are strong enough to support its weight. If it's a bridge, then they'll think about how many people might be using it and how heavy the loads on it will be. They need to understand how building materials behave, so that they can choose the best ones for the job. It's a role which involves a lot of computer technology, although civil engineers often go out to the sites too to check the building works for themselves. They can give advice to people about the best way to adapt existing buildings, like converting an unused warehouse into flats. Even more exciting is that civil and structural engineers use technology in incredible ways to make smart cities.
Whoa, smart cities? That makes it sound like the city's alive.
It's much simpler than that. To create a smart city, civil engineers use technology to collect data about what's going on. This data can be used to help make things run more smoothly. Maybe they can make traffic lights go green to speed traffic up, or help planners devise better timetables for buses and trains, or turn streetlights off when there's no one around.
You're always telling me to turn my lights off when I'm not using them.
Well, it's for the same reason. Leaving lights on when they're not being used not only wastes money, but it also consumes electricity. And the more power we use, the more harm there is to the environment. Smart cities are more energy efficient.
Cool job.
There are loads of cool jobs for engineers. Almost as many jobs as there are inventions.
Like my skate park house. I think that could be a very cool invention. I just need to solve the problem of the sloping floor.
Now you're thinking.
Engineering Explorers, created with support from the Institution of Engineering and Technology to celebrate the Year of Engineering. Find out more at funkislive.com/technomum.
Right, it's time for this week's Science in the News. Now, scientists have found a hungry black hole may be a missing cosmic link. A team of astronomers has found what it says is the best evidence for a special class of black hole, the intermediate mass black hole. Now, usually they're quite hard to spot, but this one gave itself away by eating, by tearing through a star that came too close. And they say that through more complex study and research, it might help explain much of how the universe was born. Also, rising temperatures is having a huge effect on one of the world's favourite birds. Researchers in Spain found that over a 20-year period, nightingales have evolved smaller wings. They think it's by accident as a result of other changes, but it isn't good news because it'll affect the way that they migrate. And finally, the current lockdown across the UK has prompted a fall in air pollution. Data collected shows huge reductions in the amount of nitrogen dioxide in the air. As fewer cars travel on the road, there's less exhaust fumes in the air, which is getting cleaner, which is slightly healing the planet. And that is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. Right, this is your last chance to get any train questions that you might have sent over to me so I can include them on next week's train special on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. That's the plan anyway. We're going to do a train special where I go and visit a real-life heritage steam train line to look at some of the trains and engines of the past that they're fixing up to put back on the rails. So if you've got any train question at all that's a little bit sciencey, leave it for me as a review for the Fun Kids Science Weekly over on the Apple Podcast Store, and I will do my best to find the answer for you. On the Apple Podcast Store as well, it's one of the best places that you can hear all our brilliant podcast series that we do at Fun Kids. We've got a brand new one on there as well. It's called Stuck at Home. If you're indoors right now and you need some ideas, some inspiration to keep you busy, have a listen to that. It's Stuck at Home. I'm on it every now and then as well. It's absolutely brilliant. You can find that on the Apple Podcast Store, on Google, on Spotify, wherever you get your shows from. It's on the free Fun Kids app and at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids, we're a children's radio station from the UK. You can hear us all over the country on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app, and at funkidslive.com